This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2021, Episode 4. It's summertime. Well, not officially. That doesn't happen until the summer solstice, but we are back in the studio, and Rob Zadiska, 2 months to the day. The last time we recorded was April 18th.
Good God. Seems like... I need less stuff going on.
You are a busy man, and you and I were talking briefly on the phone as we were arranging this get-together so we could get in the studio. And, you know, last year, when COVID was going on, we did it on Skype, and you came over and kept your distance. But now that, like, stuff's somewhat back to normal, you've been a busy dude.
It's like there's stuff going on. I mean, it's well, the other thing is, too, it's the summer.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always interesting to me because you always think like, summer vacation, school's out, schedules lighten up a bit. And it's one of those, since there's not school, this is when everybody packs everything else into their lives is during the summer. So you got kids, sports camps, work. All three of our kids essentially are working, have jobs. They're all doing some kind of sports. So they're doing training. All of that's organized now. So it's not just one of these like it was when I was in high school. You know what? I'll go to the gym at whatever time during the day I can make it. It's like, no, that's scheduled from this time to this time. You work around that. Kids are trying to build up community service hours for graduation in high school. So you've got all these things going on. I can't wait till the school year starts again and life slows down a little bit.
and you have that doctor thing that you got to do in the meantime.
Got the 9 to 5, still got to do that apparently.
You're the only doctor that I know works 9 to 5.
There's a lot of dermatologists out there, buddy. Come on.
Are you taking the swipe at the dermatologist?
You know what? A good-hearted, friendly swipe, because I guarantee you there are plenty of swipes taken at anesthesiologists. Anesthesiologists, we're like the lawyers of the medical world in a sense that there's entire books of just jokes about anesthesia.
Hey, speaking of anesthesia, guess who I talked to yesterday? And that would have been Friday. So we're recording this on a Saturday. I talked to Dave Remington yesterday.
Nice.
I was driving in my car. All of a sudden, the name Dave Remington pops up on the caller ID because I've got the hand-free device. And I'm like, Dave Remington, what is going on?
Looks good. Have you seen his picks?
How much do you think he's lost?
Last time I actually spoke with Dave or traded text messages with him, he was down, I believe, 90 pounds.
He's down 110.
Okay, so another 20 on top of that.
And he told me he wants to go another 20. I hope he doesn't care that we're revealing this, but he wants to have the knee surgery.
Yeah, and he said that's a big goal of his, which if you follow Dave on social media, which I follow him on Twitter, I follow him on Instagram, he's put it out there on Instagram. He's planning on getting his knees replaced. He's going through a bunch of physical therapy right now to get that done, to lose the weight.
The weight part. What's this physical therapy part of
I think he's using that very specifically to build up kind of a pre-surgical level of muscle strength. There's kind of some key muscles that he really wants to get in shape. So when he does have the surgery, he can just kind of roll right back into that physical therapy afterwards. It basically hit the ground running after surgery.
Because I've heard the knees are worse than the hips to rehab. I mean, it's just a lot harder to come back from.
It is, and everybody's different. I mean, when you look at the total joint replacements, for some reason, the knees, they hurt more. The rehab takes a little bit longer. Hips are kind of funny because it's a huge joint. You'd think, man, you're taking this huge foundational joint out of the body and replacing it with a new one. You'd think that would hurt like heck. On the flip side, maybe it's because it is such a large joint and it has so much structural support around it. People do great with the hip replacements. People get a hip replaced, they usually end up being almost kind of oddly, pleasantly surprised it doesn't hurt that much. But knees are a little bit of a butt kicker. But on the flip side, it's surgery. Surgery tends to hurt. We get everybody through it. They do great.
So, you know, Dave has announced his retirement. He's going to step down as president of the Boomer Esiason Foundation. He told me they're still going to do a trophy presentation in Lincoln. Crossing our fingers that he's going to remain the podcast sponsor. I'm trying to needle him a little bit. But he has told me when we do our next recording, because I know you and I both are going to take a couple jaunts. He's plans on joining us via the Zoom.
Nice.
To do an interview, because we haven't talked to Dave for a couple of years. It's been a couple of years.
It's since been a, well, the whole COVID thing last year kind of killed everything. So it's, I still feel like that's sort of like a weird dream we all had.
Yeah, I would agree with you. But if you were in downtown Omaha last night at Baseball Village, COVID never existed. existed. And my son actually had a concert at Annie's Irish Pub down in the Capital District. And he goes, "Hey, can you take my guitar and stuff home?" And we did that, and he sent us a video from Baseball Village, and we're talking thousands of people, and no mask, nothing. Everybody was like, "Okay, we're good to go. Here we go." And of course, the College World Series opens today, and if you need College World Series tickets, make sure to check out Chad at Ticket Express at TicketExpress.com. And the cool thing about Chad, what people may not know, is that not only can you get Husker tickets, not only can you get College World Series tickets, but you need to understand that at Ticket Express, you can get premium seating. So if you want club tickets, even suites, so if you don't have a hookup for a suite and you want a suite down in Nebraska, if you want a suite at the College World Series, are you ready for this? He can get you club or suite tickets anywhere in the country. So think about that when it comes
to... I do kind of want to know what kind of mafia connections he has, because honest to God, the guy can get anything.
He really can. And that's what's cool, because... and that's why Chad's been in business for so long, is because he is all about customer service. He's able to find you what you want, because sometimes somebody may want a suite at, I don't know, Heinz Field for a Steelers game, right? He can get that. If you want to go down to Jerry World, he can get you a suite at Cowboy Stadium or AT&T Stadium. That's what's super cool.
Which the other thing about it, which probably should play into the equation now with the whole COVID thing, if you got an event that gets canceled, postponed, delayed, he does a nice job. He'll get you the money back. It's not going to be a situation where he's going to maybe refund you, maybe not. He'll make it right. He did a really good job with that, because I know a lot of people who had a lot of canceled events through Ticket Express last year with COVID. And to a person, they were exceedingly pleased in terms of, if the concert got rescheduled, he made sure you had the tickets for the rescheduled event. If that wasn't going to be able to happen and you couldn't make it, he made sure that people got their money back. And that's hard to do in that kind of business, but it's kind of a little step extra in the customer service direction that I don't think you get from a lot of the bigger brokers out there.
What I like about our podcast is when our sponsors collaborate. So I don't know if you follow Tom Chattel on Twitter.
I do.
So did you see Tom's tweet this morning, which said the clubhouse leader down at Baseball Village was this Rosenblatt Stadium t-shirt?
I saw the t-shirt, yeah.
So are you ready for this? This is small world and how it all comes full circle. Chad at Ticket Express owns the copyright to Rosenblatt Stadium and Omaha's Rosenblatt Stadium. He has teamed with Blue 84 to make those shirts. Not only can you buy them at Baseball Village, but you can buy them at Husker Hounds. And Scotty from Husker Hounds, back on for another year of the Husker.com podcast. But those are guys that are working together.
I did not know this.
Yes. So Chad, who's, if you've ever driven by the Ticket Express office, he's got the old...
He's got the Rosenblatt Stadium sign there.
The dude is like in love with Rosenblatt Stadium, because there's so many great memories there. And I still do miss the atmosphere. But the shirts down there that they're selling, you can see. Go to Husker Hounds and get them, because I want you to go there because I want you to support Scotty. But if you're at the College World Series, those are must-get T-shirts. I'm literally going to go down to the College World Series just to get one of those shirts. Just to get one of those shirts, because they're that cool. Isn't that cool?
It is a cool shirt. If you like sports history, that's a great shirt. That was a genius idea.
100%. By the way, we're drinking beer today, and our good buddy Steve Swanstrom was back up in Wisconsin, and he brought back some more Spotted Cow. So we got the new Glarus Spotted Cow.
I'm trying hard to pace myself on this.
Well, I know. You're almost done with that.
Well, it's a good beer.
Well, from what I hear, Rob, that you... You were feeling no pain recently at the Mustaches for Kids fundraiser.
Dude, that was a good time.
How much money did you guys raise?
We hit a little over $800,000.
$800,000.
Mostly by growing mustaches and drinking beer once a week.
And your son was in on it this year too, right?
Last 2 years, yeah.
Wow. So, and you went as the Undertaker?
Yeah. Did you see the pictures?
I did. Can you picture Rob dressed as the Undertaker from the WWE?
Well, which the thing is, one of basically, I hope she doesn't get upset when I phrase this. So Chad from Ticket Express, his
he was a main sponsor of Mustaches for Kids.
He was a huge sponsor. Huge. He does a lot of charity.
He does.
Stuff, quite
he really
frankly.
Does.
His right hand man is Jessica. So yep. There's Jessica from Ticket Express. Her main squeeze was, and I went as The Undertaker and Paul Bearer. So, which, I mean, I thought we nailed it. If you saw the pictures, I thought we nailed it. So,
you know, we're going to get into talking Husker football in a second, okay? We'll get to it. Just calm down. But you had a major victory over since the last time we recorded.
Oh, and playoffs.
No,
That's a whole
I'm talking about girls wrestling becoming a sanctioned sport in the state of Nebraska.
That was a big one.
Yeah, I mean, you were very active, and you don't get too political. But if there was a campaign on Twitter, you were leading the charge for girls wrestling in the state
of
Nebraska.
I don't want to say huge, but there was a nice-sized core group of very ardent supporters for this. And it's one of those things. It needed to happen. There's huge numbers. There's numbers to support it. And the reasons it's routinely been shot down might be some of the worst reasons I've ever heard. So it's something that needed to happen. Now, they've had girls wrestling in Nebraska the last 2 years. The Nebraska State Wrestling Coaches Association, which is not the NSAA, which is the governing body, the official governing body for state high school sports, but it's the Wrestling Coaches Association in the state of Nebraska. They actually sponsored for the last 2 years a state tournament for girls wrestling. And it's been the first year they did it. It was this massive event with a huge turnout that far exceeded expectations. They broke all those numbers this year when they did it again. And so it's something that needs to get done. And I mean, I look at it in the sense that, you know, in Nebraska, we were just trying to get the sport sanctioned. When you look at other states, I mean, Iowa, for instance, which I get it. Iowa's it's a wrestling state.
Yeah, I mean,
they've had girls wrestling sanctioned for years over there. You go to the big media hubs that cover wrestling in Iowa, and girls high school wrestling is covered on the same level that boys is 100%. In Nebraska, we're just trying to get it where the state sanctioning body recognizes it. And they finally did, which I will say it was kind of a nice move by the NSAA board, because what they did last year, previous to last year, last season, they voted it in as they called it a quote-unquote emerging sport, which is a three-year process. At the end of that three-year process, it goes back out to a vote of the entire membership board of the NSAA to see whether or not it becomes sanctioned or not. Now, that entire membership board is the one group that historically there's been kind of this really strong holdout of people voting against it. And it's comprised of usually high school athletic directors throughout the state. But there's always kind of the small core group that managed to muster just enough votes to prevent it from passing. And it's one of these things, I think it needs something like 75% or 80% of membership to pass. So it's actually a pretty high percentage. At the same time, at any point in time in that 3 year period as an emergent sport, there's sort of an executive board of the NSAA. So basically a smaller, I believe, it's either an 8 or 12 person board
they have all the power.
They really kind of do. At any point in that three period of time, they can pull the trigger and go ahead, hold a vote of just themselves to push it through. And I think they saw what happened in year two with the girls state tournament this year, saw the continuing increase in numbers, And I thought did the right thing, pulled the trigger, and voted. And I believe it was a unanimous vote of that executive board to vote it in.
And just the other day, Shadron State voted that they're going to have a women's wrestling team, which is pretty cool.
NC2A Division II, which I believe they are now the I got to double check my numbers, but I believe they are the sixth college or university in the state of Nebraska alone that offers women's college wrestling.
It's really big in the NAI ranks. I went to Grandview University in Des Moines, and I know
Got an outstanding women's wrestling.
Well, team. And that
their men's just, teams,
their, okay. Their men's team's pretty
okay.
good.
They're okay,
but yeah, it's an NAI school, but they're solid and they're really good. But they've had women's wrestling for a while. You know, let's dive into Husker football and Luke McCaffrey back in the news this past week because. You know, he practiced three times with Louisville and
might have been four,
then decided, well, I'm probably not going to be the starter. At least that's what we've been led to believe, that he didn't think he was going to be the starter, and he bolted out of Louisville and now has signed with Rice. And then a lot of people think Scott Frost took a veiled swipe at Luke McCaffrey in the way guys transfer. Do you think he did? Do you think he was aiming towards Luke McCaffrey?
Well, he was obviously referencing yes. Luke. I mean, that's blazingly obvious. I don't think it was a swipe. I think so. Here's the thing: I've seen a few people on Twitter. So I had a pretty extensive Twitter conversation.
I noticed
about
that
with a lot of folks, and you know, a few people said, "Hey, he didn't need to bring it up at all." It's like, well, I get that. I mean, it's kind of to be asked the question that Scott was asked about the transfer portal. To not address it is kind of it would be a very awkward dance around the 800-pound gorilla sitting in the room. It happened. I'm not sure I have a problem with it per se. Quite frankly, I'm very pro transfer portal. It's you got to take the good with the bad, and I think on the whole, with the direction that college athletics are moving, football in particular. When you look at a lot of these changes, and stuff's happening fast. And for years, I was kind of a hardcore traditionalist until I saw a few things happen that really changed my mind that things are, in my opinion, moving in to make the sport a better sport overall and moving it in a better direction. And one of those things was the transfer portal. I think it's ultimately, you may not like all aspects of it. There's some positives that have come out of the transfer portal for Nebraska. So you can't take the good and be that upset about the bad. You got to take it all together.
And since we last talked, the NCAA has said, listen, they're waiving you get the one-time transfer, right? You don't have to sit out, which was the right move to make.
Correct.
Now, when it comes to the transfer portal, I don't know if you should be able to just go somewhere new every year you can't do that. There'll still be a penalty if you transfer the second time. It'd be interesting, if you think the transfer portal was bad this year, I still say wait till next year because you have a bunch of incoming freshmen that never step foot on a campus.
No, correct. And the whole COVID thing, I think there's going to be probably a good couple of years here that sort of
– Yep.
There's going to be a lot of hammering out of details here over the next couple of years in terms of how that's going to affect things. But, yeah, I don't see it getting any more controlled. I think it's going to get kind of wild here for a couple of years. But, you know, the Luke McCaffrey thing – I don't have a problem with Scott referencing it. It's he wasn't talking bad about Luke. He was talking about the potential pitfalls of the transfer portal itself and how sometimes it can lead to kids. And he basically said, hey, it can lead to kids like Luke's situation where guys go one spot and suddenly realize, ooh, this was maybe not a good move. And then you get into this chasing a position, chasing a team, chasing a starting spot, chasing that ideal situation kind of type of scenario that I think Luke sort of fell into. Multiple transfers, how that affects academics, all of that. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts here, and I think Frost was referencing the pitfalls in that sense, how guys can kind of, you're trying to find that perfect spot, and it can be hard to do. At the same time, he was also calling out the people, and this is one of the things I jumped on that I thought was perfectly legitimate for Scott to do. He called out the guys who are giving these kids advice. And a lot of times these kids do not get good advice. And they kind of get told, here's who you are, here's what you ought to do. And, you know, there's a lot of examples of this we could go into.
It's funny that you say that, and it's not football related. I'm going to bring up the Iowa Hawkeyes, if that's okay. I had Frank Garza on my radio show in Des Moines, and he was talking about after...
And that's Luca's dad.
Luca's dad, who was the National Player of the Year, Naismith Award winner, Wooden Award winner. He said that after his sophomore year, it was amazing the amount of advisors and advice people that came to him and said, your kid's never going to develop the way he needs to at Iowa. You need to bring him back to play at Georgetown for Patrick Ewing. So there was some heat. But he goes, you know, they made a commitment to play for Fran McCaffrey. They made a commitment, and that development happened, and he ended up being the player of the year. That means he's going to be an NBA player. But his career turned out okay. But you mentioned the advice. I'm not saying you shouldn't leave, but you better make sure the advice you're getting is the correct advice and the right advice.
Oh, and it's hard to do. There's a lot of not being able to see the forest for the trees here type of situations for a lot of these kids. The thing with McCaffrey is, and I've talked about this extensively on Twitter, he's not a college quarterback. I mean, he's a guy, he's got a high school arm.
That's a great analogy.
That's about the best way I can. He's got a good, solid high school arm. That's it. Now, he's an incredible athlete, and I think he could be a great college football player. I just don't think he's a great quarterback. I think he'd be a great slot guy. He could be another one. What Nebraska really wanted and was using guys like J.D. Spielman and Wandale Robinson for, which they kind of had to lean on that due to a lot of circumstances, but he's one of those guys that could be sort of that slash for you. The slot receiver, third down running back. He's your reverse guy. He's your kick returner. He's your Taysom Hill. You stick him in as sort of a wildcat quarterback periodically. That's the kind of role that he would do great in and would absolutely excel in. A lot of people even said, you know, he's not big enough to be a running back. You know what? The guy, I think he's 6'2", 200 pounds, 205 maybe.
Is he 6'2"?
I believe he's 6'2".
He didn't look like that on TV.
Well, he's so damn lanky. But I mean, I think that's due to his height, although I think of somebody who's 6'2", is not that tall.
By the way, I want to thank you for giving me clickbait, because that's going to be the title of the podcast. Luke McCaffrey has a high school arm. I'm serious. Because I know people will fucking click on that,
oh,
right?
Oh, they will. But it's true. He does. I mean, the guy, when he's throwing a 15-yard hitch to the flat, he looks like a kid, like, lining up to launch a Hail Mary in a high school game with it all on the line with 4 seconds left. I mean, it's this drop back, and then it's this step, almost shot put like heave to get the ball to go freaking 15 yards. And I remember watching that last season when he was playing quarterback, and all I could think to myself was like, what's he got to do when he actually has to get the ball downfield, for God's sakes? It's like, no wonder we're doing nothing but throwing little short 14, 15-yard passes across the middle to Wandale. We don't have a quarterback who can get the goddamn ball downfield. Now, then there's Adrian Shoulder, which plays into that as well. But my point is, with Luke, the guy can't throw the ball. But he's one of those guys that I think, you know, go bury yourself in a weight room for an off season. There's 15 pounds of ripped and shredded muscle right there. And all of a sudden, he's 6'1", 6'2", 220, 225 pounds. And you got a guy who is just a beast of a running back. And, oh, look at Christian. I mean, that's exactly the mold he's in. It's just, it depends on how you mold yourself and what you're training for. He stayed at 6'2", 205 or so because he thinks he's a quarterback, but he's not.
So you mentioned Christian, because both the McCaffrey brothers kind of went after Scott Frost.
By the way, who's Max and where did he go?
I have no idea who Max is.
Who does he play NFL ball for? Apparently he's in the NFL.
But Christian got into it, and we kind of got into the Scott, kind of taking a shot at Frost, and they all wanted to point it out that Scott Frost was a transfer product.
Scott wasn't begging on transferring. He was begging, and that's the reason the McCaffrey brothers, I mean, that was a huge attempt at deflection by the McCaffrey brothers. Scott wasn't bagging on kids transferring. Scott was bagging on the people who are giving bad advice,
which may be the brothers.
To these kids. Oh, I guarantee you it's the brothers and it's Ed. And that's what I don't understand about it is you have some people who are incredible. This is the not seeing the forest for the trees thing. These are some people who I was going to say are, but maybe I should rephrase it as should be incredibly football savvy in terms of evaluating a kid's potential and a kid's talent and telling this kid where he fits in the scheme of things. And by all accounts, and this is going back months ago, everybody's been telling this kid, you're a quarterback, go be a quarterback. And it's just not going to happen. I mean, I don't want to dredge up the past. I love Eric Crouch. He's a great guy.
He was a good college quarterback. Great college quarterback.
He was a Heisman-winning college quarterback, albeit.
Wasn't for his arm.
In a running option offense. Nobody gave Crouch the Heisman because of his throwing ability. He gave him because people saw a 99-yard touchdown run against Missouri where he broke like 15 tackles. But when Crouch got to the NFL, Crouch gets drafted, and the NFL looks at him and says, by the way, you're a kick returner and a third down running back and a slot wide receiver. Here's hundreds of thousands of dollars. Go do it. And Crouch will talk about it now a little bit. He's made some allusions to this over time in the media, so I'm not like exposing new information here. He got bad advice. He was told by a close group of advisors who were little stupid and somewhat misguided that no, you're a quarterback. Follow your dreams. Go be an NFL quarterback. And he's not one. And it kind of, I hate saying that, that plus some untimely injuries ended Crouch's NFL career or chance at having an NFL career. I think if Crouch had stayed with the Rams, embraced that role of being a kick returner, slot guy, third down running back, I think Crouch has sort of a kind of a milder version of sort of a Tim Dwight type career in the NFL. I mean, if you want to talk Iowa sports here,
yeah, look at you! Look at you getting a Hawkeye in there. I like that. I like
Dwight
that.
Dwight
he had a good NFL career, but he knew what he was. He was a return specialist, and he was a receiver. Yeah. But he was friggin' fast.
Oh my God, that guy could fly! But I mean, he did a great job with it, and you know what? He had a great NFL career doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, he came out of Iowa.
Do you think it hurts?
As a kick returner, slot receiver, third down running back.
Because Christian McCaffrey is so popular. I mean, he's got the Madden 99 or whatever that thing's called. Does it hurt recruiting when guys like that start taking shots at Scott Frost?
I don't think so, because I also subscribe to the whole notion that any attention is good attention.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that.
And I think a recruit's going to come in, they're going to see that, and I think the next thing they're going to ask is, well, there's a reason McCaffrey went here in the first place. And number two, it's drawing attention. I mean, if you got a problem with it, ask about it. Ask what the situation is. And I guarantee you, Scott's going to tell a kid, hey, you know what? I was honest with him. I was upfront with him. I told him what his skill set was and where he fit into the scheme of things. And I don't think he wanted to hear that. I mean, so he decided to transfer, and we supported him in that decision. Fine. There you go. Recruits going to be perfectly happy hearing that.
You mentioned recruits. We're recording on June 19th. On June 1st, the dead period or NCAA, you know, you can't go on campus was lifted because of the COVID restrictions. Am I naive here? You know, Arizona State's now under NCAA investigation because they were pretty brazen about bringing recruits on campus during COVID, right? I mean, there's like pictures, they had like vans. Am I naive here to think, well, you were just open and honest about it, you're stupid, I think everybody did it. Am I that, or am I being too cynical?
I think you're being a little cynical because I know for a fact. So, okay, my kid plays for Omaha West.
Yes.
He's a good, solid athlete, good, solid football player. He's not a Power 5 D1 scholarship recruit.
Yeah.
But he played with a lot of them. I mean, we had four D1 guys.
Including your nephew.
Yeah. So we had four D1
guys. Well, I mean, guys. Your nephew well, played, yeah, but he didn't play with him. But
yeah, we had four D1 guys at
Westside.
At Westside alone. You go out to Elkhorn South, and I know from talking to my brother and my nephew, Elkhorn South has, I think they've got, over the last 2 years, same kind of thing. They got 3, 4, 5 kids all at Power 5 schools. Handful of other kids going to Group of 5 schools. So there's a lot of D1 kids that we have close contact with over the last couple of years. God, not, I mean, I'm thinking about like Avante Dickerson, who, I mean, this is one of these guys who had, whoever's been in the top 10 over the last half dozen years, he had an offer from him. I mean, it was the LSUs, Florida's, Ohio State's, Auburn's, Oregon's, USC's, the Michigan's, all those schools. I know for a fact that COVID has like kiboshed his visit. So the places that he was looking hard at, Nebraska was obviously in the mix, but I mean, he looked hard at Nebraska, Ohio State, LSU, Oregon was always in the mix. Minnesota, who he originally committed to. And one of the things that did hurt Minnesota ultimately was the fact he couldn't take a visit there. It was all via Zoom, and he originally committed to them. And they had kind of some things within their program that kind of made him eventually shy away from going to Minnesota. But I know the thing that eventually swayed him was a visit to Oregon. But I also know for a fact it was an unofficial visit where he basically had to get himself and his mom up to the Oregon campus and basically walk around by himself to kind of figure out where everything was and figure out if that's where he wanted to go. So I know a lot of these kids but personally.
Do you think you accidentally bump into a coach, though?
Oh, I'm sure that probably happened. I'm not that naive, but at the same time, there's some stuff they can do.
Well, I mean, I get paying for yourself to get there. Yeah, because
the stuff that Arizona State, which seemed highly, highly organized.
Yeah, I'm going to meet you in the stairwell. Yeah. I'm going to meet you here. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, though, too, with the thing at Oregon, that didn't happen until this spring.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really late in the game that he even took the trip up to their campus. I mean, that campus was shut down. So you couldn't even go to the damn campus until this spring. So as soon as the campus opened, he went up. Arizona State was hosting guys back in November. So, I mean, when you got vans rolling up with half a dozen recruits piling out.
You know you're going to get caught, right?
Yeah, that's one of those things. That's not a, hey, I'm going to be walking around campus because I want to see where the classroom buildings are at and I want to know what the dorms look like and can I hack the weather here this time of year? And if we happen to run into each other, awesome. I'm just letting you know I'll be there. There's a big and now I'm not saying that happened at Oregon. I'm just telling you if that happens anywhere, there's a big difference between that and having multiple scheduled organized trips with like half a dozen recruits at a time on a regularly scheduled basis. That's a whole nother level of flaunting the rules.
What I find interesting, because it reminds me of that movie Blue Chips, but you know, they're like, in early writings, like, we were unaware if Herm Edwards knows this was taking place. And it goes back to, I remember Chris Carter, I think it was on ESPN, when he was talking about, somebody's got to be the fall guy. You keep the head coach out of it, and somebody's got to be the fall guy. So somebody's going to get fired over this. May not be Herm Edwards, but somebody's going to get fired over it. Because somebody's got to be the fall guy.
This will be interesting because this is the level of stuff that you would think the head coach, if they don't know about it, they should.
Exactly.
And if it's this bad and it's stuff you really should know about and you don't, that's a problem. So it's one of those things. Herm can stand up and say, hey, I did not know that this was going on. That's the kind of thing you get fired for also, because that's the kind of thing you should know is going on.
100%.
So it's, it'll be interesting to see how all of that pans out and what kind of penalties end up coming out of this.
Of course, the Nebraska baseball team was made it to the regional, got knocked out by Arkansas, which Arkansas didn't even make it to the College World Series. And a lot of people were upset that Nebraska got paired with Arkansas, and I get it. But don't blame – a lot of people took shots at the NCAA. And I think you're in agreement here, Rob. This was not an NCAA problem.
And I did tweet that I did not blame the NC2A for the pairing.
And, you know, I talked to Kyle Peterson. And Kyle Peterson, of course, on ESPN, former Creighton Prep kid.
What was his take?
He said, no, it's the Big Ten's fault. Yeah. He said, do not – if you're only going to let your teams play Big Ten teams and not play the rest of the country, that's your fault. It's not the NCAA's fault. And Kyle was 100% okay with where they put Nebraska and where they were seated. And this was in Kevin Warren and the Big Ten, like, ruined the entire sports year. It made zero sense, because football played by a strict set of rules. Basketball didn't seem to. And then baseball, they're like, we're only going to play conference games. That's really good on a non-really threatening baseball league when you need to play Southern schools to build up that RPI.
Well, and if it's a COVID thing, which, and again, I...
Was it really?
Like, here's my problem with the whole COVID thing is that I've been a pretty strong supporter on the science side of stuff. And the vast majority of the Big Ten sports decisions, well, a lot of people's sports and school-based decisions, ignored a ton of scientific common sense. I mean, it's sort of like the OPS, the Omaha Public Schools in Omaha, which canceled their entire fall sports season. So you've got, with the exception of volleyball, you've got a sports season that's played outdoors. It's cross country. It's football. Like, I have trouble wrapping my head around, okay, you got all these kids who are going to be outside the whole time. We're going to cancel that sports season. And then the minute the winter sports season hits, hey, basketball. Yeah, let's pack everybody inside and we're a go. I don't get the logic there.
Now, the Big Ten,
I'm not saying they should.
The Big Ten never allowed fans in. You know, the Big East did, but I'm with you. But they say like outdoors, your chances decrease tremendously.
Why are you allowing why are you slapping these restrictions on baseball, for God's sakes? I mean, it was idiotic. I will never ever understand the decision making of logic of the Big Ten over the last year here. I mean, it's just absolutely stupid. And I mean, we talked about this already on the football side, in the sense that we think a lot of it, I think, just boiled down to ego and the Big Ten wanting to be that mover and shaker that could step back at the end of the day and say, hey, we were the ones who made the right decision. We were the ones who got out in front of this. We were the ones who did the right thing here. And in the end, I mean, it completely bit him in the ass. It was not the right thing. It was blatantly wrong. And then they kept doing it throughout the entire course of the year. So, I mean, I got to be honest with you. I'm still leery of what this next year is going to be like.
How so?
It just, at some point, I mean, you saw how... I don't know if frivolous is the right word, but how fickle maybe their mindset and ability to make a bad decision at the snap of your fingers.
You know what?
That utterly, I mean, just huge reverberating decisions where they're just, we're not sure what to do. Screw it, we're canceling the season.
You know why that is, Rob?
They're idiots.
Because
no balls.
Because they want to be politically correct. Political correctness has crippled some organizations because they don't want to be painted in a bad light, right? But leading up to that, let's not forget the Dennis Dodds, the Pat Fortys of the world were trying to influence the college football season by saying it should not be played. And I think that...
When your livelihood depends on writing about this stuff, you'd think those guys pulling their hair out.
And I'm yet to see those guys say, hey, we were wrong. I'm yet to hear...
Oh, they never will.
They never will.
I mean, I want to hear Desmond Howard. I want to hear Michael Wilbon. I want to hear those guys come out and be like, yeah, Nebraska was right. Somebody, I'm blanking. Who was it? Somebody did say that. And I'm blanking on who it was.
It wasn't Feinbaum, was it?
No, but one of those reporters actually did eventually come back.
Because it came out with all the emails that Ohio State had by saying, hey, we're going to look at playing a non-conference. They were looking to play.
Yeah, somebody else actually came out and said, yeah, Nebraska was right. And I'm absolutely blanking on who it was.
Because Nebraska was not afraid. I'll give them this. And you know, Iowa supported Nebraska. I do believe that. But they weren't willing to lead like Nebraska would. They weren't willing to be vulnerable enough to put themselves out there to be criticized like Nebraska
was. Which the funny thing is, and one thing I love Frost and Moose for is the fact that they don't have a problem just saying, screw it, we're going to tell you what we think.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It got turned into, oh, you want to leave the Big Ten? No, they just want to play football. Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is I think Nebraska has just enough clout because they've got some financial – they got a little financial oomph here because when you look at teams –
Yeah, they don't have clout competitive-wise.
I totally get that. But on a national level, when you look at the teams that have recognition, merchandise sales, things like that, oddly enough, Nebraska is still a top 10 team. I mean, you wouldn't think they'd be, but for some reason they are.
I mean, you got alumni base spread all over the country. You're the only really game in the state. I get it. I mean, there's still brand power.
Yeah, you got brand power in a state that has a, quite frankly, kind of a small alumni base across the nation and a small state population.
But they're still spread out all over the place.
Yeah,
so
I think Texas, somebody like Texas, big school, yeah. Ohio State, big school, Michigan, big school, massive numbers of alumni across the nation. Those are the teams that I thought would have been out there making these kinds of pronouncements against their own conference.
Hey, go ahead.
And it's not. It's Nebraska. That always surprises me.
This is going to be a sharp left-hand turn, a right-hand turn, however you want to look at it. You've been following this Michigan shit with Bo Schembechler and that doc?
Yeah, a little bit.
This baffles me. You go to Ohio State with the wrestling team and the doctor. You go to Michigan State and what went on there. Now we're finding out about Michigan. Over 800 complaints. We're talking football players that say they were abused by a doctor. Help me understand this here, because and I get it. There's probably a little paranoia. You don't want to cross Bo Schembechler, or you don't want to say something. Probably just embarrassment. But why didn't these are college football players? Why didn't get up and beat the shit out of the guy?
That's a good question. Now, here's the thing. You're asking somebody that this kind of thing never happened to. And when we were at Nebraska.
But aren't you amazed how many stories?
Yeah.
Just when you think you've heard it all, it just keeps coming.
It does. And I mean, you even have Schembechler's son saying this happened.
Well, that's the adopted son. Then you have the other part of the family going, nope, Bo had no idea. Well, of course, and I hate when this happens posthumously because you never really get to know. You're always left to wonder.
Yeah, but even if Schembechler was still alive, you'd think this is something he would address.
No, not at all. Not at all.
You know, so two thoughts on it. One, it's to a certain degree, it's hard for me to wrap my head around it because it's not something that I experienced or the guys that I played with experienced. I mean, maybe I'm not even going to crack a joke
about it.
But it's one of those things that I don't have a viewpoint of having experienced this to feel like I could make a good comment on what those guys went through and why did they or did they not react in a certain way? Because surely you'd think you would. Now, on the flip side of it, and what did happen at Nebraska is that you do live in a world that exists in kind of this incredibly protected bubble. And if there is some degree of, I don't know what you want to call it, people who are unhappy for a certain reason, whether it's a racial issue, sexual misconduct, I mean, whatever issue you want it to be, sports teams, whether it's professional, whether it's a college team, look at the Saints with the
a bounty gate.
The bounty gate. Thank you. Couldn't remember the term bounty, but yeah, where they were. I mean, that was this incredibly subversive, quiet, dark, covered up culture within that program. It's an NFL football team. And that went on for years before that finally broke to the surface. You look at a lot of schools you get this protective enclave around it where even the people who are suffering to a degree, it's sort of like the abused wife syndrome. It's like even they tend to be protective of the family. They tend to be protective of that status quo where they don't want to cause a further disruption. And so it locks in. I mean, it's a very, very complex psychology with, so many levels and layers to it. It's hard to understand. Why don't people speak up when it happens? Why don't they speak up afterwards, but sooner than they did? Why does nobody else speak up until maybe one other person does? I don't have a good answer to that question. I mean, because you even think about, so when all the racial stuff came out at Iowa last year, you look at Chris Doyle and the issues that Iowa went through last year,
I know Husker fans are going to have ill thoughts of Kurt Ferentz. The fact that he came out of that almost smelling like a rose baffles me.
I got to be honest with you, because some of the stuff that people were saying about Kirk and Brian Ferentz even, I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting situation there. But when that happened, I got to be honest with you. I'm sitting here going like, God, did we have that at Nebraska?
Did you?
You know what? You can't tell me there wasn't some degree of racism there. I mean, the story I've spoken about before in terms of, and you know, I've kind of referenced this a lot in terms of what Jack Stark did for that program.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because we had a guy like Jack Stark, but when I first hit the door, I remember my very first team meeting was in the weight room at Nebraska, and it was a full team meeting before the start of summer conditioning. Several of the coaching staff, the strength staff, basically kind of laying out the plans. Here's how the summer is going to go. Here's what's going to happen. Here's some goals we're going to be working on, et cetera. But anyway, it was a full team meeting. Incoming freshmen were there, so on and so forth. There was like this line. I mean, it was almost a gap down the middle of the weight room. And it was like all the black guys plus Steve Carmer on one side and all the white guys plus Will Shields on the other side. And it's like, I remember looking around going like,
is that racism or is it just cultural differences where you just don't know each other?
Yeah, but I mean, and I'm not sure, maybe, I don't know, maybe racism isn't the right word, but yeah. I think when people make the comment about where people say sort of the systemic racism, I don't think it has to be crosses burning in a yard.
And I don't think it has to be, because racism itself is meaning you're a superior race. I don't know. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, but there is a systemic, how's this? If
systemic
you don't
biases?
There is a systemic racial divide.
Okay, that's a better way to put it.
How's that? Yes. If you don't like systemic racism, because I'd be the first to tell you.
And we're all guilty of it.
Yeah, it wasn't a superiority thing when you...
You're next to Will Shields, you're like... Yeah.
Will had a lot of superiority there when it came to athletic ability and a lot of other levels.
Athleticism,
leadership, intelligence. Anyway, but yeah, there was a systemic racial divide. How's that?
I think that's a better way to put it.
So if you want to ask me, was there a problem at Nebraska when I played there? Yeah, there was a systemic racial divide there when I was there. But I look at the guys that I look at now who I still consider friends. I mean, I'm thinking about guys like Clinton Childs and Damon Benning, guys I still talk to regularly.
Have you seen Clinton lately? Dude looks like grandpa, man. He got that gray beard.
Oh, I don't want to say he's always had that, but
he looks, yeah.
Dad's had that a long time. But it's the Lovie Smith look, although I'm convinced Lovie stole that from Clint.
He might have.
But, I mean, you got these guys that I look at that I'm like, God, these guys are my friends, and I love these guys. And I'm like, at some point, I need to. It's not a, I wonder if I should. I need to ask them. It's like, how bad was it when we were there? Because there was a racial divide when I was there, but at the time you chalk that up to, this is just the way it is. This is the way things are done. And there's always this tendency to look back and not a tendency to look forward with these type of things, because I think you look back and go like, well, this is way better than it was in the 60s and 70s, for instance. Or this is better. I mean, now that it's 1990, 1991, I guarantee you this is way better than it was when Devaney was the coach and there were road trips where black guys couldn't stay in the same part of the hotel as the white guys or in the same hotel even. I mean, and so there's that part of tendency plays into it that, God, you think this is bad. You should have seen it 30 years ago. I think that mindset also builds into sort of that protective enclave where with those things going on at Michigan. I mean, you can even go back to Penn State.
Yeah.
The culture at Penn State that kept Sandusky's actions under wraps and at Penn State, that flowed out into the community. I mean, the law enforcement community there kind of kept that under wraps for literally for decades. So it's when you look at it from a cultural standpoint and the structure of these entities, sports teams, academic institutions, whether it's a college team and an NFL team, I mean, there's a lot of self-protection of the overall entity that takes place even by the people who are being harmed.
Hey, I got a weird question for you. And this is another pivot, another left-hand turn. Because this has been in the news all week. Shelby Houlihan, who's a Sioux City native, actually, was put on a 4-year ban by the World Whatever Track and Field Association because she tested positive for, is it nandrolone? Am I saying that right?
I think nandrolone is, in fact.
She says she got it from a burrito. Says the pig oval gave her the nandrolone. You buying that?
I'll tell you what. I have ingested a massive amount of highly processed pork products in my time as an athlete and got tested a crap ton and never tested positive. Pretty unlikely.
Now, they did say her levels were really low, and the people that banned her haven't given her an excuse. They haven't said, hey, here's our – they just said you're banned, 4 years, final, but they haven't given her the reason why. They haven't gone in deeper, which that leads to even more, hey, is she telling the truth?
Well, she had a banned substance in her system.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's boom, done.
Well, I get that, but if it can't – and it has been shown that – and scientists have said this, that yes, the pig – oh, you know, if you eat the burrito, it may happen. Just low. Because look how many steroids are given to pigs. Lots. Yeah.
No, it is. I mean, you see that in the meat industry on the whole.
Yeah.
Could it be true? Yeah. Is that the type of and that's the thing. It's hard for me to judge versus not judge here, in the sense that when baseball first started testing for anabolic steroids, performance-enhancing drugs, I remember sitting there thinking to myself, they're not going to find jack squat. And the reason is because I was looking around the NFL that had at the time when baseball got started, NFL football had been drug testing for probably the better part of a decade. And actually, I was on one of the player committees that met with Lombardi, Doc at Ohio State, who's at the time was the head of the NFL drug testing program. And I remember multiple conversations with him about the whole how guys can fake a positive, can fake a negative test, excuses. No. It came from this. It came from that. And the truth of the matter is, he said, listen, the stuff we're actually testing for takes all of that stuff into account. If we get you with a positive test, you got it in your system. Now, you may not have gotten it into your system. I mean, it might have been through no fault of your own. I mean, I actually know one of the guys I knew when I played football, we had the same agent, was Jim Miller, who's a Michigan State quarterback, played a bunch of years for the Pittsburgh Steelers and then the Chicago Bears, and now he's a commentator on Big Ten Network. Well, Jim actually tested positive for a performance-enhancing substance, and it was like DHEA or one of those other, which is actually it's an over-the-counter. You can still get it today at any GNC or health supplement store. So it's not one of these. It's not the full Barry Bonds cream in the clear kind of stuff. It's an over-the-counter supplement, but it's one that was banned. Well, he literally had gone to a GNC, bought a sports supplement milkshake, a protein shake. Yeah. It had DHEA in it. He didn't read the label. He was just like, it's a freaking protein shake. All I wanted was a protein shake. He tested positive for DHEA. He went back, looked at the label, and was like, oh, shit, look at that. It's got DHEA in it. And he goes, I didn't even know that was banned, let alone what it was. I just wanted a protein shake. He tested positive. He had a 4-game suspension, and that was the end of it. But
do you think track and field should suspend 4 years? I mean, that ended her career.
Yeah. I mean, the idea there is I mean, it's targeted at the Olympic athletes.
I get
the
idea that, behind. I mean, baseball, your second offense is a full season. I get that.
Yeah.
4 years?
Yeah, I think it's quite frankly. See, the thing with track and field, I'm not saying it's right. I think it's a bullshit penalty. I think they hammer these athletes. My understanding is from talking to Lombardi at the time, and the reason that I call it the Olympic sports community is so incredibly harsh with their penalties is that supposedly the use of these supplements and the use of these performance-enhancing drugs, even today, still remains huge. It's huge. I mean, it's an absolute industry.
I mean,
and I think it used to be bigger, but I mean, they crack down so incredibly hard because it is such a big industry within that sports community that if the penalties aren't that severe, people will easily flaunt it. Because you do a 1-year ban in track and field, people are kind of like, fine, I'll train like gangbusters for that year that I'm banned, and guess what? You'll see me at next year's World Championships.
Well,
you'll see me at the following year's Pan American Games. It's not like one of these things. You do a 1-year ban, you've completely removed them from the sport. You kind of got to hit them hard. Otherwise, they're just coming back for the next big ticket sponsored event, and they're going to blow everybody away a year later.
Here's what I know, and I could be wrong.
Although I'm trying to figure out how a 1,600 and 3,200 person per, why the hell are they taking an anabolic steroid?
Here's what I know, and because I've seen it over the course of time, is the first time I learned about steroids was about Lyle Alzado, right? I mean, that's when, I mean, that I that's just my age group. So I'm dating myself. There'll be some people listen to podcasts.
We're the same age. I had guys that I played high school football with who were taking them in
No,
high
but
school.
I mean, the danger of them, right? Because gotcha. I mean, yeah. you realize, okay, I get it. All I know is this. As long as there's competition in the world, you're always going to have somebody who's trying to get an edge, and they're going to cheat to get that edge. We've seen it over the course of time. It's never going to go away. There are always going to be people who try to beat the system. And what happens is, normally, good people who wouldn't do it go, well, I know they're doing it, so I'm going to do it, or I'm never going to be able to compete with that
guy. Well, and that's the Lance Armstrong effect, which is one of those things. I look at Lance Armstrong, and you know, I've heard these stories that Lance Armstrong is like a total asshole or whatnot. At least on the competition side, I still look at Lance Armstrong and go, he won 7 tours. You can't tell me he did, because here's the thing. I guarantee you, everybody he was racing against was dopey.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on
that.
He's
the guy who he did 2 things wrong. He went Alabama and won too much.
And then denied, and ruined everybody else's life behind him.
Yeah, and then he was an asshole to everybody. Those were why everybody hammered him.
Because he ruined a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
And then you're right, was a total dick. And then people are going to go after you. If you're a total dick to somebody, they're going to go after you. And
if Cal Ripken Jr. came out and said, I used anabolic steroids, guess what? Everybody like, you're Cal Ripken.
Well,
you're a cool dude.
It's interesting. We could have a whole nother discussion, and this isn't the time for it, about what's going on in baseball right now with the doctored baseballs. Because I did a poll question on my radio show. What was worse for the game? The anabolic steroids, the performance enhancing drugs.
I answered this poll.
The banging on the trash cans, which to me, that was far worse than anything. And Houston really didn't get slapped around, or the sticky substances. And I think anabolic steroids, the PEDs, was like last in the poll.
I don't think anybody cares about it that much.
No.
They think
you're not letting Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame. You're not letting Roger Clemens in the game. And if this is so bad, are you going to kick every pitcher out? Are you not going to let some of these pitchers
in?
Well,
this is the thing that's kind of interesting. And, you know, I know we're running a little bit long but...
It's a podcast. We can go as long as we want. I'm just trying to be respectful of your
right.
time.
You know, when you look at the stuff that people dislike, you know, baseball is one of these sports where there's a certain amount... I'm not sure I want to call it cheating, but there's a certain amount of cheating that gets chalked up as gamesmanship.
Yes.
And honestly, like the sticky ball thing, I think for some reason that's one of those things that gets chalked up as gamesmanship.
Well, I think what happened was, and it's taking it to another level. Most hitters said they didn't have a problem with the sunscreen or rosin because they want the pitcher to have somewhat of control over the baseball so it doesn't get out of them. What happened is the spider tack took it to a completely different level, right? You've got like industrial strength, super glue, and pine tar and some other things, which made the ball just absolutely nasty. But, you know, you're also seeing home runs hitting farther than you ever have in a long time. So it's just an interesting way to look at it. And
it is. I guess what I don't understand is why the anabolic steroid thing in baseball irks the baseball community. And when I say that, players, coaches, managers, and the sports writers that cover it. But a lot of these other things, I mean, the trash can thing in Houston.
That's like, the worst.
Like the only thing, the only people that were really, really bugged by that were fans of other teams. Like, I don't think players gave that much of a rat's ass about it. I mean, I don't think they liked it.
Yeah, but, I mean, you're giving away pitch. That's a huge advantage if a hitter knows exactly what pitch is coming.
Yeah, I'll give you that. But I mean, the doctoring the ball, that's one of those things from a fan standpoint.
I'm
to the point where I'm almost past not surprised to almost disappointed if you're not trying to do something like that.
I go back.
Does that make sense?
I go back to when I was on Todd and Tyler, and I agree with them more and more, and I miss the boys. But they always just said, you know, let's just have the all like steroid Olympics. Let's have the all. I mean, just everybody cheat.
Remove all
rules. Barriers and see what this thing looks like. Right? That would be kind of cool to watch. Just what? How far can we push the human body?
Oh my God.
Oh man. Dr. Rob Zadiska, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend.
Absolutely. Well, we got a growing controversy with the playoff system we're going to have to hit here within the next couple of weeks.
We didn't even hit on the expansion that has not taken place yet, but we will talk about it. Let's save that. There's our teaser for the next one. All right,
there we go.
If you don't follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, do so at DocTalkSports. Again, that's at DocTalkSports. Please give a big shout out to our presenting sponsor, the Remington Trophy and Dave Remington and the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Our supporting sponsors, Ticket Express. Gotta love your Ticket Express. If you need your College World Series tickets or your premium seating anywhere in the country, go to TicketExpress.com. Husker Hound. Scotty has all the gear that you need. Go buy one of those cool Rosenblatt t-shirts while you're down there. And who am I missing? Am I missing anybody? I don't know if I'm missing anybody.
Remington, Ticket Express, Husker Hound.
Oh, Husker Max, too. The good boys at Husker Max who distribute this podcast. We appreciate it. Rob, we'll be back in like 2, maybe 3 weeks. Dave Remington's supposed to join us, and we'll talk about the expansion of the college football playoff. We'll do
like a post-4th of July.
Okay, that sounds. We can make that one work. This is the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.